Sounds True and Shambhala Lion Editions present A Brief History of Everything by Ken Wilber. Session 2, Worldviews and the Postmodern Revolution.
Now, we just ran through the techno-economic base of each epoch. What about the corresponding worldviews?
Well, the general point is fairly simple. Different stages of consciousness growth present a different view of the world. The world looks different, is different, at each stage. As new cognitive capacities unfold and evolve, the cosmos looks at itself with different eyes, and it sees quite different things. For convenience, I generally call these worldviews archaic, magic, mythic, rational, and existential, with higher stages possible.
So these are different ways that we look at the world.
Yes, but we have to be very careful here. This might seem to be splitting hairs, but it really is very important. It's not that there is a single pre-given world, and we simply look at it differently. Rather, as the cosmos comes to know itself more fully, different worlds emerge. It's like an acorn growing to an oak. An oak isn't a different picture of the same unchanging world present in the acorn. The oak has components in its own being that are quite new and different from anything found in the acorn. The oak has leaves, branches, roots, and so on, none of which are present in the acorn's actual world view or world space. Different worldviews create different worlds, enact different worlds. They aren't just the same world seen differently. One of the things we want to do is trace the history of these worldviews. They are part of evolution in the human domain, which means the various forms of spirit in action as it unfolds through the human mind. At each of these stages, the cosmos looks at itself with new eyes, and thus brings forth new worlds not previously existing. This approach recognizes that world and worldview are not altogether pre-given, but rather develop in history. And so it simply investigates the actual history and unfolding of these worldviews, not as a series of merely arbitrary flailings around, but rather as an evolutionary or developmental pattern governed in part by the currents of evolution itself.
Governed by the five tenets?
In my particular version of developmentalism, yes. But the important point is, in many of these developmental or evolutionary approaches, each worldview gives way to its successor because certain inherent limitations in the earlier worldview become apparent. This generates a great deal of disruption and chaos, so to speak, and the system, if it doesn't simply collapse, escapes this chaos by evolving to a more highly organized pattern. These new and higher patterns solve or diffuse the earlier problems, but then introduce their own recalcitrant problems and inherent limitations that cannot be solved on their own level. The same process of evolution we see in the other domains as well.
You mentioned these worldviews as archaic, magic, mythic, rational, and existential, with the possibility of higher stages yet to come.
Well, yes, that's one way to summarize them in a very general fashion. We'll look at these worldviews as we investigate the various levels of development. Meanwhile, suffice it to say that I correlate these mental worldviews with the material modes of production at each stage of human evolution. So, corresponding with those worldviews that you just mentioned, we have respectively foraging, horticultural, agrarian, industrial, informational.
So, in a sentence?
The worldview is the mind. The base is the body of spirit. These body-minds evolve and bring forth new worlds in the process. As spirit unfolds its own potential, a radiant flower in cosmic spring, not so much Big Bang as Big Bloom. And at each stage of development, the world looks different because the world is different. And there is the great postmodern revelation.
So how can you tell if there's any sort of advantage to one worldview or another?
Transcends and includes. As the higher stages of consciousness emerge and develop, they themselves include the basic components of the earlier worldview, then add their own new and more differentiated perceptions. They transcend and include. Because they are more inclusive, they're more adequate. So it's not that the earlier worldview is totally wrong and the new worldview is totally right. The earlier one was adequate. The new one is more adequate. If it's not more adequate, then it won't be selected by evolution. It won't catch the currents of the cosmos. It'll go by the wayside, flotsam and jetsam on the shores of what might have been. Of course, this doesn't mean that a higher worldview is without its own problems. Just the contrary. Wherever there's the possibility of transcendence, there is, by the very same token, the possibility of repression. The higher might not just transcend and include, it might transcend and repress, exclude, alienate, dissociate. And so, in following the emergence of worldviews, we have to keep a constant watch for possible repressions and dissociations that have occurred, and are still occurring in the historical process. The point is that the animal that can transcend can also repress, at any level. So this theme, transcendence versus repression, is an altogether crucial theme of historical development. And we want to watch carefully for signs of repression at each stage of human evolution, individual and collective. And this includes, of course, the massive problems with industrialization.
So each new worldview faces its own grave problems.
Creates its own grave problems. The solution of the old problem is the creation of a new one. They come into being together, although the new problems usually surface only as the worldview approaches its own demise. This is the wonder, and this is the nightmare of worldviews. And we are at the point where the mental, rational, industrial worldview is running into the grave problems inherent in its own organization. We've run up against our own limitations. We have met the enemy, and of course, it is us. The modern is struggling to give way to the postmodern. The phase-specific, phase-appropriate modern worldview, having served its purposes, is now living in its own fumes. We're breathing our own exhaust. And how we handle this, how we collectively handle this, will determine whether a new and more adequate worldview emerges to diffuse these problems, or whether we're buried in our own wastes. Spirit has run up against its own limitations at this stage in its unfolding. This extraordinary modern flower blossomed in its glorious spring and now can do nothing but watch its own leaves fall dead on the ground of a rising tomorrow. And what indeed will bloom in that new field?
You've said that there are four corners of the cosmos, four dimensions which apply to any holon, which you name as the four quadrants. Now, what are the four quadrants? What's their foundation? And what's their function?
The four quadrants have a very simple foundation. These four types of holarchies are actually dealing with the inside and the outside of a holon in both its individual and collective forms, and that gives us four quadrants. Inside and outside, singular and plural. Some of the simplest distinctions we can make. And these very simple features, which are present in all holons, generate these four quadrants, or so I maintain. All four of these holarchies are dealing with real aspects of real holons, which is why these four types of holarchies keep insistently showing up on the various maps around the world. It appears that these are some very bedrock realities, these four corners of the cosmos. The four quadrants are the interior and exterior of the individual and the collective. We can start with the individual holon, in both its interior and exterior aspects. In other words, with the upper left quadrant and the upper right quadrant. In the upper right quadrant first, you have the typical holarchy presented in any standard biology textbook. Atoms to cells to molecules to organisms and so on. Each level transcends and includes its predecessor. Each level includes the basics of the previous level and then adds its own distinctive and defining characteristics, its own emergence. But notice that these are all exterior descriptions. It's what these holons look like from the outside in an objective and empirical manner. Thus, in a scientific text, you'll find the limbic system, for example, described in detail, its components, its biochemistry, when and how it evolved, how it relates to other parts of the organism, and so on. And you'll probably find it mentioned that the limbic system is the home of certain very fundamental emotions, certain basic types of sex and aggression and fear and desire, whether that limbic system appears in horses or humans or apes. But of those emotions, of course, you will not find much description, because emotions pertain to the interior experience of the limbic system. These emotions and the awareness that goes with them are what the holon with a limbic system experiences from within, on the inside, in its interior. And objective scientific descriptions are not much interested in that interior consciousness, because that interior space cannot be accessed in an objective empirical fashion. You can only feel these feelings from within. When you experience a sort of primal joy, for example, even if you are a brain physiologist, you do not say to yourself, "Wow, what a limbic day." Rather, you describe these feelings in intimate, personal, emotional terms, subjective terms. "I feel wonderful, it's great to be alive," or whatnot. So in the upper left quadrant, you have types of subjective or interior awareness that go with these various objective or exterior forms in the upper right quadrant. Irritability, and I don't mean here emotional irritability. I mean irritability in the physiological sense, the capacity for organic matter to actively respond to environmental stimuli, begins with cells. Sensations emerge with neuronal organisms, and perceptions emerge with a neural cord. Impulses emerge with the brainstem, and basic emotions with the limbic system, and so on. This is also a holarchy, but a subjective or interior holarchy. Each level also transcends and includes its predecessor. The left-hand quadrants deal with what the holon looks like from within. The right-hand quadrants address what the same holon looks like from without. Interior and exterior. Consciousness and form, subjective and objective.
Now the upper right quadrant is the one we're most familiar with, simply because it's part of the standard objective empirical scientific map.
That's right. And we can assume it's accurate enough as far as it goes. It gives the typical holarchy for individual holons described in objective terms, atoms to molecules to cells to simple organisms, and then to more complex organisms.
So what you've just described is the upper half of the four quadrants, the individual. But there's also the lower half, the collective.
Right. Individual holons exist only in communities of similar depth holons. And this communal aspect also has an interior and an exterior, which are lower left and lower right.
And you call these cultural and social.
Mm-hmm. Cultural refers to all of the interior meanings and values and identities that we share with those of similar communities, whether it's a tribal community or a national community or a world community. And social refers to all of the exterior, material, institutional forms of the community, from its techno-economic base to its architectural styles to its written codes to its population size, to name a few. So in a very general sense, cultural refers to the shared collective worldview, and social refers to the material base of that worldview. Social means any objective, concrete, material components, and especially the techno-economic base, such as foraging, horticultural, agrarian, industrial, informational, etc. And the geopolitical structures of villages, states, world federation, and so on. These are all examples of the exterior forms of the collective. As we were saying earlier, the cosmos looks different at each of these stages because the cosmos is different at each of these stages. At each of these stages, the cosmos looks at itself with new eyes and thus brings forth new worlds not previously existing.
So to illustrate how these four quadrants are related to each other, why don't you take an example of a single thought holon, and show how it has correlates in all four quadrants.
Okay. Let's say I have a thought of going to the grocery store. When I have that thought, what I actually experience is the thought itself, the interior thought and its meaning, the symbols, the images, the idea of going to the grocery store, that's upper left. While I'm having this thought, there are, of course, correlative changes occurring in my brain. Dopamine increases, acetylcholine jumps the synapses, beta brain waves increase or whatnot. Those are observable behaviors in my brain. They can be empirically observed, scientifically registered. and that is upper right. Now, the internal thought itself only makes sense in terms of my cultural background. If I spoke a different language, the thought would be composed of different symbols and have different meanings. If I existed in a primal tribal society a million years ago, I would never even have the thought going to the grocery store. It might be time to kill the bear. The point is that my thoughts themselves arise in a cultural background that gives texture and meaning and context to my individual thoughts. So the cultural community serves as an intrinsic background to any individual thoughts I might have. My thoughts do not just pop into my head out of nowhere. They pop into my head out of a cultural background. And however much I might move beyond this background, I can never simply escape it altogether. And I could never have developed thoughts in the first place without it. The occasional cases of a wolf boy, humans raised in the wild, show that the human brain, left without culture, does not produce linguistic thoughts on its own. The self is far from the autonomous and self-generating monad the Enlightenment imagined. In short, my individual thoughts only exist against a vast background of cultural practices and languages and meanings, without which I could form virtually no individual thoughts at all. And this vast background is my culture, my cultural worldview, my world space, which is the lower left. But my culture itself is not simply disembodied, hanging in idealistic mid-air. It has material components, much as my own individual thoughts have material brain components. All cultural events have social correlates. These concrete social components include types of technology, forces of production, that is, horticultural, agrarian, industrial, etc., concrete institutions, written codes and patterns, geopolitical locations, such as towns, villages, states, etc., and so on. And these material, social, empirically observable components, the actual social system, are crucial in helping to determine the types of cultural worldview. So my supposedly individual thought actually has at least these four facets, these four aspects, intentional, behavioral, cultural, and social. And around the circle we go. The social system will have a strong influence on the cultural worldview, which will set limits to the individual thoughts that I can have, which will register in the brain physiology. And you can go around that circle in any direction you want. The quadrants are all interwoven. They're all mutually determining. They all cause and are caused by the other quadrants.
Because all individual holons have these four facets.
Yes, every holon has these four aspects, these four quadrants. It's not that an individual holon exists in one or another of these quadrants. It's that every individual holon has these four quadrants, these four aspects to its being. It's like a diamond with four facets or four faces. If we want to consciously find these evolutionary currents operating in our own being as well, if we want to consciously join spirit in action, then the four quadrants can help us orient ourselves more effectively, can help us become more conscious of the evolutionary currents already flowing around us and through us and in us. We could say that spirit manifests as all four quadrants. Spirit isn't just a higher self or just Gaia or just awareness or just the web of life or just the sum total of all objective phenomena or just transcendental consciousness. Rather, spirit exists in and as all four quadrants, the four compass points, as it were, of the known cosmos, all of which are needed to accurately navigate. Higher or deeper stages of consciousness development disclose deeper and wider patterns in self, in individual behavior, in culture, and in society. Intentional, behavioral, cultural, and social. All four quadrants. I don't think that a partial approach will ever work. It seems instead that we need an integral approach that will include all four quadrants, all four faces of spirit. Perhaps the secret to deeper transformation involves this more balanced, complete, and integral approach.
So you started to suggest that each quadrant has a different type of truth. Now, this doesn't look like we're moving toward an integral or inclusive view. It looks like we're moving into parts and fragments and lots of differences.
Yes, but that's actually good news. By understanding these different truths and acknowledging them, we can more sympathetically include them in an integral embrace. We can more expansively attune ourselves to the cosmos. The final result might even be an attunement with the all, might even be cosmic consciousness itself. Why not? But I think first we need to understand these various truths so they can begin to speak to us, in us, through us, and we can begin to hear their voices and honor them, and thus invite all of them together into a rainbow coalition, an integral embrace. These truths are behind much of the great postmodern rebellion. They're the key to the interior and transcendental dimensions. They speak eloquently in tongues of hidden gods and angels. They point to the heart of holons in general and invite us into that interior world. They are an antidote to the flat and faded world that passes for today. These four types of truths are the four faces of spirit as it shines in the manifest world.
For example?
Well, many people interpret spiritual experiences basically in terms of only the upper left quadrant. They see the experience in terms of a higher self or higher consciousness or archetypal forms or enneagram patterns or care of the soul or the inner voice or transcendental awareness and so forth. They tend to ignore the cultural and social and behavioral components. So their insights are limited in terms of how to relate this higher self to the other quadrants. Others see the experiences as basically a product of brain states, the upper right. They attempt to interpret these experiences as coming solely or predominantly from theta brainwave states or massive endorphin release or hemispheric synchronization and so on. This also devastates the cultural and social components, not to mention the interior states of consciousness itself. It is hyper-objective and merely technological. Others attempt to interpret these experiences mostly in terms of the lower right quadrant. The ultimate reality for them is the empirical web of life, or Gaia, or the biosphere, or the social system, and all holons are reduced to being merely a strand in the great web. These approaches poorly understand the interior stages of consciousness development and reduce all left-hand components to right-hand strands in the empirical web. This mistakes great span for great depth, and therefore collapses vertical depth to horizontal expansion. Others attempt to interpret these experiences merely in terms of collective cultural consciousness and a coming worldview transformation, the lower left quadrant. This overlooks what individual consciousness can do at any given point and denies the importance of social structures and institutions in helping to support and embed these experiences.
All of which tend to be very partial.
All of these one-quadrant interpretations have a moment of truth to them, and an important moment at that. But because they don't adequately include the other quadrants, they cripple the original experience.
So the point is,
since spirit in action manifests as all four quadrants, then an adequate interpretation of a spiritual experience ought to take all four quadrants into account. It's not just that we have different levels, matter, body, mind, soul, and spirit, but that each of these manifests in four facets, intentional, behavioral, cultural, and social.
So in other words, a balanced or integral view would include all of that. All of the levels, and all of the quadrants.
Oh, yes, I think so. A truly integral view would be all level, all quadrant. This integral view becomes especially important as you look at the higher or deeper stages of human growth and development, at the further stages of consciousness evolution. If there is indeed a transformation in our future, it lies in these higher or deeper stages. And it looks like these can only be accessed in their richness and fullness if we honor and appreciate the different types of truth that will unfold to set us free. These quadrants are simply aspects of the cosmos, aspects of our very own being. So the whole point, I think, is that we want to find ourselves in sympathetic attunement with all aspects of the cosmos. We want to find ourselves at home in the cosmos. We want to touch the truth in each of the quadrants. We begin to do so by noticing that each speaks to us with a different voice. If we listen carefully, we can hear each of these voices whispering gently their truths, and finally joining in a harmonious chorus that quietly calls us home. we can fully resonate with those liberating truths if we know how to recognize and honor them. From attunement to atonement to at-one-ment, we find ourselves in the overpowering embrace of a cosmic sympathy on the very verge of cosmic consciousness itself, if we listen very carefully.